welcome to the first Rugby World Cup podcast with me, Michael McCann. Thank you very much for joining us at the Millennium Stadium. It's fitting I present you this opening link from here, given that it is on cue, as it's just demonstrated with the cheer for Joe Schmidt, known for producing the best atmosphere in the world, according to many. Over the next 6 weeks, I'll be presenting to you the best news, reaction and opinion from representatives across a wide range of the 20 teams competing in this tournament. But for a start, it's natural that we should focus on the host England, given that they have opened up their World Cup campaign now after defeating Fiji. And I spoke to rugby writer Stuart Barnes about what he thought of that victory and also the crunch game coming up against Wales. Thank you for coming on, Stuart.
A pleasure.
And what were your general thoughts on that England performance against Fiji?
Very nervous, but there's no surprise there. It was an intense occasion. I think England were very poor for 65 minutes. Their decision making wasn't good. Their breakdown was poor. Scrum was poor. But in the last 20 minutes, they were excellent. The starting 15 struggled. The bench were brilliant. And if they can play games at the start as they finish them, then they'll be formidable. If they keep playing as they started, they're going to find this is a long World Cup.
And it's often talked about, particularly in World Cups, how 9 and 10 are such key positions, dictate the game. Kicking is such an important part of rugby union as well. What did you make of the men in those shoes for England?
Ben Young's had a very nervous game on his 50th cap. He was indecisive, he dithered a bit, and that didn't help George Ford. Ford disappointed me a little bit. I'm a great fan of his, but he didn't demand that the forwards played directly and went over that gain line, and because of that both Youngs and Ford played on the back foot, and England shuffled a little bit from touchline to touchline, which is why I was critical of their first 50 minutes or so performance. So I would stick with them, because when they're at their best, they're the hub of the England creative spark, but they certainly need to tighten their game up a little bit.
Do you think the way England tactically approached that game actually helped the Fijians a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. When England caught and drove that line out, that's the way you play Fiji. You use collective and organised power over Fijians' individual might. What England did, they played quite flat, they went across the line and they tried to get outside them, and they just set targets up for Fiji's one-on-one big hitters. What England did in the first half, they turned 15 aside at times into glorified sevens, and that is the antithesis of what
the team you want to do that against.
No, the antithesis of what you need to do against Fiji. So I didn't feel it was an intelligent performance. They need to be far more tactically astute than they were. You know, whilst it's a much bigger game against Wales, they will be tactically far, far sharper.
And you preempted my next question. Of course, we're in Cardiff and the Welsh fans will be baying for some blood. Do you think that Warren Gatland is really enjoying the fact that it seems like his team are being consistently talked down at the minute?
No. Nobody wants their team to be talked down, because when you're being talked down, it means most of the world assume that you're not as good as the other team. The best thing to be in rugby is talked up as the best team. You win most games. That's why the New Zealanders do so well. But Gatland understands that, and he's trying to turn what's a very bad situation into a better one. Harpenny's the best international goal kicker in the planet. World Cup matches like England-Wales can be tight. That's a hammer blow. Bigger's a brilliant kicker, but he's got to prove it under the white-hot pressure of Twickenham. Reece Webb is Wales' most dynamic runner. If you just said to me, two out of three or four players Wales cannot do to be without, they'd be number one and two.
Jonathan Davis as well.
Well, Jonathan Davis, that's long term, and that's the nature of the game, isn't it? You accept that in the same way, you know, Tuolangi's not fit for England and they've made an absolute mess by not selecting Stephen Armitage. Those things are done and dusted and they're in the past, so you sort of just get on and up with them.
As for England, can you envisage any particularly notable changes in the 15 or the squad ahead of that game? Coming off the back of what you said, the bench performed so well and the starting 15 in comparison were so disappointing.
Yeah, if you look at the selection day to day, you could have half a dozen changes there, but it's not like that. You have to work out your best team and stick with it. Youngs and Ford weren't good, but you know, they were outstanding for England last season, and they're key men. To me, I think Joe Launchbury has to come in. He has to give them a bit more heft early in the game, and the most obvious choice is Billy Vunipola, who, when he came on, changed the way England played. They ratcheted up the gears, they dominated the gain line, they started to play some rugby, so he has to play.
Finally, got to ask you for a couple of predictions. Firstly, who's going to win the tournament? Secondly, how's the pool group of death going to finish? And in fact, a third one, finally, what's the England Wales result going to be? Well, look into your magic crystal bullshit.
I chucked my crystal ball away about 6 weeks ago, and if you read the Times, you'd have seen that. I've been to so many World Cups, it doesn't really do to make predictions because you end up looking daft. There are always shocks that you cannot anticipate. So my predictions, A, are forced from me, and B, they're not said with any commitment at all. I will say New Zealand start...
That's the disclaimer, Dan.
That's my disclaimer. New Zealand start this tournament as the best team in the world. They will finish it as the best team in the world. They might not win. If they don't win, probably it'll be the pressure put on New Zealand by New Zealand. So, taking all that into account, with all the other caveats, New Zealand would be my favourites. Pool of death, I still have a feeling that England somehow are going to top that pool with Wales going out, because Wales have so much problem beating Australia. I think Wales lose next week, and they really are a terrible mess. And finally, England, Wales. Well, if I'm saying England are going to win the pool and Wales are going out, you got your answer.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for your time,
Stuart. My pleasure. Cheers, Michael.
Thank you very much to Stuart for his time and expertise there. And whilst most of the focus here at the Millennium will be on Ireland, it's only right that we focus on teams like Canada, their opponents, who make the spirit of the tournament what it is. And that's why we're now going to cross our attention to a neighbouring country of Canada, the USA, who are also in this tournament, and start their campaign against Samoa at the Brighton Community Stadium on Sunday.
And I'm joined by John Saul from Seattle News. Thanks for coming on, John.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So just tell us a bit about how you got into rugby, because it's not thought of as really an American sport. It's in a very crowded market.
That's true. And most people who play, like me, started when they were in college. Not so much anymore, but certainly back in the day when I started at Ohio State University, played for the team there, and then went out and joined some clubs on the West Coast. Now living in Seattle and played for a team there.
And what do you see as a realistic ambition for the American team in this tournament?
Well, I mean, ultimately, everybody, of course, wants to win it. Realistically, I would think that the ambition ought to be to win a couple games, maybe. Beat Samoa and beat Japan. It'll be tough to beat South Africa and Scotland, you know, maybe an outside chance. If they have an off day and we have a really good day, but we'd like to come home with a couple of wins, you know. That'd be super for the game in America.
And just for those who don't know, the USA versus Japan, in terms of recent history and actual form between these teams, how do you see that game going?
That could be the play for pride game. Recently, the U.S. beat Japan with a last-minute pushover try in the Pacific Nations Championship. They'd certainly like to repeat that, but we'll see.
And for people who don't know that much about both rugby in America and the current national team, is there a particular man to look out for?
I would look at McGinty, who's the kicker for them. There's a couple of fast wingers out there. We've got a man from Seattle who might play in the front row, Olive Kaliki. He's a hard runner. He's a lot to bring down. He could play a role.
As for the wider influence of rugby in America, there's been stories of it growing. How do you see the development of the sport?
A couple of wins would really do it is being televised. When I grew up, you never could find a rugby game on TV anywhere. Now it's being televised by NBC. You can see it on TV, and I think more people see it, the better it is. And if they see him win, that's even better.
Thank you very much for your time, John, and enjoy the tournament.
Thank you.
Thanks to John Saul, and on the point of neighbouring countries, just look at the USA's neighbours Japan, who've just beaten South Africa in what is one of the greatest shocks ever in Rugby World Cup history, defeating them 34-32 with a try on the very last play at King's Home in Gloucester. Simply unbelievable scenes, even in the press room at Cardiff, everybody behind the underdogs who recorded an amazing victory that will go down in rugby folklore. That's us done for this week. Thank you very much for joining me. Do follow me on Twitter at MLMC_123. We'll be back next week with more news, views and opinions from the 2015 Rugby World Cup. Don't miss it. I've been Michael McCann. Bye for now.